This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So then,
oh my god,
what the fuck happened?
This is great.
So I was gagged.
I love this. So okay, so she's sitting and
what's up, hot queen?
Did you bring the baby gherkins?
This is when I really felt like maybe we shouldn't do this podcast.
Astronomical.
I hate to see it.
Wasted potential.
Are you drunk?
I am so drunk right now.
Welcome to Bad Author Book Club, where we're not like other authors, we're worse. I am Claribel A. Ortega.
And I'm Ryan LaSala, and we're two authors reading the most bizarre fiction we can find. And we are back with I can't wait for this episode. This is going to be a stunning deep dive into one of the best chapters so far in the current season 2 read for BABC, which is The Story of Lex and Livia, Rebels, City of Indra by Kendall and Kylie Jenner. But before we get into all that, I want all of our listeners to go find us on social media, give us a like, give us a follow, give us a rating, a review. All of this helps the podcast reach even more hot queens out there. So if you love the podcast, find us on Twitter at Bad Author Pod, Instagram at Bad Author Book Club, and our website is badauthorbookclub.wordpress.com. And of course, as the hot queens know, we love to shout about all the books that we read on our Discord, which is basically like a chat room / forum experience for the book club. So if you're having fun listening to the podcast, if you want to give us your fresh hot takes on the reads that we're reading or tell us about your own strange library, find the Discord link in our show notes and meet us there.
Yes, find it. Go.
Oh, Angel, how are you? You're looking good again.
Thank you. I'm good. I had to skip the gym today because I went too hard with the weights yesterday and everything hurts. But it's good because I needed sort of like a day off from activity. Can't lift every day.
Dude, yeah. No, rest days are really important. And I always sort of ignored rest days because I'd be like, well, if I have 5 days to go to the gym, I'm going to go all five of them. But what I learned was that, no, if I'm good about it and incorporating rest in an effective way, then I'm actually much more consistent in my gym routine because I'm not like in shambles, right? Like after 5 days straight of like
absolutely
lifting. And for anyone who like can't see me or doesn't know what I look like, I lift very heavy weights. That's like my favorite thing to do, is to lift really heavy shit and put it back down. So does Claribel, actually. One time Claribel was at my apartment and I turned around and Claribel was deadlifting like 90 pounds of weights that they just like found in my apartment. And looking around like, am I doing this? And like me and someone else, we were like, yeah, like, are you doing it? And it was just something, like, we were like a little tipsy too. So don't drink and weightlift, but we are two powerlifting podcast hosts. And we are here to
or do. We're not the cops.
Yeah, you know, it's true. It's true. But I'm in a good mood today because I'm going to go to the gym after this. I spent my morning turning in a short story for a like unannounced anthology, but I'll give you all the scoop. It's about fairies. It's like a whole anthology of like fae stories that I'm in with a lot of your faves when it comes to writing like fantasy and fae. So I just turned in my short story this morning and I really like it. I'm really excited about it.
Oh, I can't wait. Just from the little details you gave me, it sounds so incredibly good.
Yeah,
it's gonna what else was good?
What?
Surprisingly, the chapter today.
Dude, what the fuck? I feel like we're reading a different book. The last two chapters.
I was invested.
Really, like, I mean, not the last one, because that was a mess. But, like, do you find it funny that finally this book has turned a corner, and it's, of course, during the two, like, really big pivotal, like, things that we've been counting down towards, both the, like, the whatever it was, like, the virtual game and the emergence ball, like, go fucking figure.
Yeah, the simulation, the final simulation.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into it. We should probably do our little chapter announcement.
Okay,
so
yes. Let us begin.
So today's episode is Chapter 12, Emergence Ball, Livia. We made it.
I can't believe we're here. I really, there was a
I never thought the day would come.
I didn't think it was going to get to this point, but we're here. I'm so excited. I am so relieved that we're at the Emergence Ball with, like, no, like, 8 hours before, like, the morning of, which we at one point thought that was going to happen.
I would have had a heart attack. Like,
yeah.
That it would have not been good.
Yeah.
Like, I would have had a mental breakdown if they did that to me. And I was fully expecting it to be, like, 24 hours and, like, each chapter be another hour.
Yeah.
No, that would have been awful. No, we don't jump straight into it. We do get a little excerpt from the Book of Indra, Chapter 5, Indra Society and Customs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just basically talks about what the Emergence Ball is all about and how when a young woman turns 17, she basically debuts for society to find her cohabitant.
Yep.
We already knew that.
Yeah, debutante ball.
So then we actually get into it and we start with Livia. She's spinning like a top.
She's up there.
On that platform.
Yeah.
She's up there.
She's spinning. And so to give you the visual, they're basically in a ballroom on, I believe, Helix Island. Like that's...
Yes.
It is
they're
Helix
in
Island.
Her house.
They're in her house. And I thought for a really long time that the Emergence Ball was one ball, but actually it's sort of like a quinceañera or like a debutante ball where like everyone sort of has their own Emergence Ball, right? Like it's not like a big group thing. So this is specifically Livia's Emergence Ball. And she is...
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, right. Well, because it seems... I mean, that also feels like very, like, why, like, we're all going to go to, like the Reaping or, like, the Emergence Ball, right? It feels like this should be done as, like, a group, but no. So, Livia's on this platform.
Right.
Micah, sorry, that's her nemesis, is obviously in attendance as a guest. And something that really surprised me is that we haven't really learned a ton about the actual itinerary of the balls, just kind of what it takes to be a proper young woman. I really didn't think that there was going to be a practical application to the whole spinning platform Mr. Toad's Wild Ride of Madness, but as it turns out, that is a very practical exercise because literally the ball consists of her just spinning around on a platform.
Which I think is really cool, actually, because it is sort of like she's on display, like she's this doll that's like in front of everyone. Everyone's staring at her.
Mm-hmm.
Why it has to be so high in the air and like she can't breathe at the same time. It's like adding all of these like obstacles. It just feels like they make it so hard for them. Like she's wearing a cincher.
Mm-hmm.
Her feet are killing her. She's very high in the air. She can hear everything everyone's saying about her and people are being fucking rude. Like she obviously hears Micah. By the way, I mixed up Micah and Cassina in my head in this chapter the entire time.
It's all right.
Like, I just thought it was Cassina.
It's like the same person with, like, different disguises on.
Even in my notes, I wrote, we start off with the flashbacks of Cassina. It's like, no, it's not Cassina, actually. but yeah, it is very harrowing. It's, like, sort of very difficult. So before we actually get to... We see a flash of her. Like, we know she's rotating.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that sort of she's freaking out up there. Like, she's having a hard time. But then also, her dress sounds really beautiful.
It does.
It's all shades of blue, it says. And it's shimmering, like the ocean. Like, she just looks good. Like, she's fucking snatched.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't recognize herself. She's never looked so good in her life.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this line. In terms of competition, there is none. I am immaculate, all except for my thoughts. I was like, okay, Nicki Minaj, bars.
Nicki Minaj, Nicki Lewinsky, Nicki. No, there was some very beautiful writing in like a lot of this chapter, and It is clear.
I
don't know what happened. Well, I know what happened. It's clear that this is the thing that, like, they want to be writing about, right? Like,
about,
in the same
yeah.
way that, like, the action really sings for Lex's chapters. Like, this is really exciting, I think, for whoever was, like, tasked with writing this. Like, they want to write, like, the ballroom, like, the princess moments. And so there's some really, like, lovely twists and turns. And we'll shed some light on it as we go. The dress is also really heavy because of the beading. So she's, and, like, if anyone's ever worn anything that's, like, bedazzled or, like, beaded, that adds a ton of weight to everything. So how she's sitting yeah. on this platform that is spinning is beyond me. But I love that there's a practical application to, like, the tutoring lessons mm-hmm. that is now being
yeah.
used. I thought that that was just going to be silliness, but this is sort of where, like, Model Land didn't connect the dots. Like, there was an actual real-life application here to the crazy shit that they're making them do. So she's up on the platform. She's overhearing, like, people gossiping, but at the same time, she's reminiscing on the various types of gossip that have been sort of thrown around during etiquette class, just as, like, a cautionary tale. For instance, there was a girl who fell during her spin moment.
Yeah, it's literally, like, it's like a lore, like a legend right. now. Like, it's literally called, like, the girl who fell. Like, mm-hmm. this whole story.
Yeah, and she, interestingly, was 6'2" and from excellent genetic stock. And then they mention that, like, that's, like, really a prize. And I was like, wow, like, that is a tall girl. But she then, because she fell, she had to cohabitate with someone who is less than 6 feet tall. And this is,
oh,
like,
my God, not a short king.
Yeah, not a short king, which is so funny to me. So, like, there, I love the currency of height in this world. But I didn't realize that, like, the girls, too, were these, like giant people, but apparently
me
so.
Either
so,
my gosh,
in Indra is like 7 feet tall, but yeah, so she's like a cautionary tale. And at one point Livia, like, mentions it to Marius, who's like, oh yeah, that really happened, like, poor girl, like, I wanted to give her a handkerchief, but, like, notably, no one helps this girl, everyone pities her, no one helps her, and she becomes, like, a legend of disgrace. And that's what Livia's thinking about as she's trying not to fall herself.
She's thinking about that, and it actually, like, she says that, like, Micah, she achieved her goal because she, like, freaked her out, which is, like, what Micah was trying to do, because every time she told the story, she kept looking at Livia, kind of like, you're next, bitch. And she also is, like, it's ironic because, like, Micah's, like, projecting at the same time, because she fell
yeah.
from the platform. She, like, did. She, like, famously fell the first time, and, like, but no one's allowed to mention that. The way I would have been, like, didn't you fall, bitch? Why are you talking about the girl who fell? The girl who fell is you.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You're twins.
I want to go to the other emergence balls. I want a whole book of just attending the balls and, like, the weird court drama behind the scenes, because I feel like they're, like, I love the high stakes nature of, like, a party in a book, and I love the things that sort of have to happen, because if they don't happen, they never will, right? And, like, parties draw these things
yeah.
out into the open plot-wise, so, oh, and that's exactly what happens during the scene, too. So, anyways, she doesn't fall. She's fine on her platform. Like, she does a good job. She stays up there. Mm-hmm. Per usual, the book sort of vacillates between, like, what is currently happening and, like, memories and stuff that kind of bubble up to the surface, which is, like, very, like,
yeah.
Jane Austen-y. And so she, okay, well, actually, here's a line that I really liked. My whole body aches. My insides are screaming. Focus, Livia. Circle and pose. My future spins below me. I try not to look down. That is great writing, because it does the double entendre of, like, what she doesn't want to face, which is looking down because she'll fall, but also she'll fall into her future because all beneath her are all of these men looking up at her that she doesn't want
yes.
anything to do with. And I'm like, ah, this is so good. This is great. Anyways, she doesn't end up falling, and she is lowered down and sort of released to the second part of the evening, which is, like, talking with all the men that are dying.
The guys.
Her. Yeah.
One thing we sort of skipped over, the girl who fell, not only was her partner a short king, he was gay.
Oh my God, wait, I'm so glad that you brought this up. Oh my God, wait, yes, let's flip back. This was crazy. This is the best part of the chapter. This, I can't believe we skipped it.
It is so good. I was like, finally some representation for Ryan. Yeah. They are talking about the gay men.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they were like, the worst part is that, like, he's known to want to, like, like he favors the attention of men, mm-hmm. and apparently he's like frolicking on some like gay island. It's like it's Fire Island.
He's going to Fire
he's
Island.
Like on Fire Island yeah. with his like gay. And so Livia also mentions that like back in like the before times, before mm-hmm. the great catastrophe, gay people were allowed to like get married and stuff. But now because of this focus on cohabitation and like having babies and everything like that, they are like, you can't be gay anymore, like it's like not okay. And then she's like, I guess we're not like more evolved in every way. And I'm like, in which ways are you evolved? Like fake synthetic fruit? Like you don't even have horses.
Yeah. Last time I checked, you didn't even have horses. But
you have horses.
You're right about that. So okay, the second that it was mentioned that this man is running around with other men, I winced because, of course, the only mention of gayness yet in the book is to basically show shame, right? Like it's a means of showing,
of course,
that there's an incredible
yeah.
shame. And I'm like, well, fucking duh. Like here we go. Like, oh, this man, he's sleeping with other men. Like, what a scandal! How embarrassing for like this girl, right? Because this book is, you know, about and for girls, so we're not gonna worry about this. Like, probably this young man who's obviously very oppressed, but whatever. That get mentioned, and I had my initial cringe, and I was ready to sort of dig into it, but then I really do appreciate that basically the book takes it a little bit further and is like, well, yeah, I mean, the reason that there are these attitudes is because of, like, the focus on, like, procreation and, like, genetics and, like, all this other, like, fucked up shit about the world, and while I do think it's kind of a little weird that, like, Livia is here having ruminations on, like, well, I think gay people are all right. Like, what does she care about, like, the deep past, too? Like, but I do appreciate it, and I do think that, like, for a YA novel that's published into our world, right? Like, that's going to be read by a ton of, like, little gay kids, it is important to show something affirming, or at least to check on the page that, like, hey, this homophobia, this shame is a type of regression that can pop up anywhere, like, even in a society that thinks it's, like, beyond things like this, too. So I appreciate yeah. that. I really liked it. Like, it turned the corner for me, and there's even a moment when she goes, well, and I can't even say that being okay, that being gay is okay. She doesn't say, gay is never said. The word gay does not appear here, but she says, like, you know, in defense of, like, men who sleep with other men or people like that, of course saying such a thing would be considered anti-Indrithian hate speech. It's highly illegal. And I love that. Like,
wow.
The use of, like, the term hate speech to describe, like, defending the case is a little funny to me. But I really, yeah, I'm glad you brought it up because I love that moment.
Yeah, I was surprised you didn't. I was like, hello.
I totally forgot.
Gayness. So, okay, so we're done with gays. Mm. Now we're lowering the platform, and she's like dreading it because she has to talk to all these guys, and they are so thirsty for her. Like,
dude, yeah.
They're all like staring at her. She looks good. Okay. She looks really good. Remember, she doesn't have to try. She's already snatched. Mm-hmm. She's already the most beautiful. No competition, even though she didn't try at all.
Yeah.
So everyone's wanting to, and there were some criticisms of her when she was up on the platform. Like, people were saying, like, oh, she's rebellious. Maybe we can, like, make her shut the fuck up. Like, there were some procedures for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all good, but, like, because of her name and because, like, she's rich and, like, she has this, like, beautiful estate, and because she's so beautiful, they're all thirsty for her. They're all wanting to talk to her. So she has to, basically, when she was up on the platform, mm-hmm. she was doing like a series of poses. And when she gets down, it's like a dance, basically. The men have to memorize the poses that she was doing. And then that becomes sort of like their waltz, right?
Yeah.
And they have to dance together. And as they dance, she has to talk to them and get to know them. The problem is all these guys are like really mid and boring and saying the same thing over again because it's just like polite speech that they were taught to say.
Yep.
They're all telling her how like goated they are, how mm-hmm. rich they are, how they have it all together, and why, how beautiful she is, and like why they would make a good match. And she's really bored. She's like, none of you guys are interesting to me.
Yeah. And she's internally, the way this is written is kind of fun because she's they're talking to her and she's responding, but in her own head with like the truth. Mm-hmm. Like they're like, hi, I'm so-and-so. And she's like, I'm Livia and I am strange and confused and I prefer my horse to any person. Or like, they'll say like, I'm really wealthy. And she'll think like, please say something interesting. And I'm like, this is, yes. This is kind of fun. I like this. I think it's in part because finally her, like she's sort of gotten, Livia has a bit of a cruel sense to her, right? Like she is egotistical and she's really dismissive of other people, and I think part of what makes it fun now is because it's aimed at people who like definitely have earned her ear, like her, like, you know, her wrath, right? Like these like boring men mm-hmm. that are fawning over her that she can't stand. It hasn't felt like fun like this for all the pages preceding it because it's been aimed at like other girls that are like trying to just get through the horror show that is like girlhood as well too.
Right.
There's even a moment when she mentioned, like she's reminiscing in this chapter literally that like Micah has sort of left her alone but talks about her constantly, and that during etiquette classes Livia has no choice but to talk to the ugly girl. Like she literally calls her like the unappealing, like physically unappealing girl, and even the physically unappealing girl doesn't seem to even want to deign to talk to Livia because, you know, and Livia can't figure out why. But then we actually get a snippet of their conversation, and it's because Livia is like fucking patronizing and a scold. Like the girl is just trying to get through class by being like, ah, the weather's nice. And Livia's like, yeah, and it was nice yesterday and the day before that, and it'll be nice tomorrow and the day after that, and it'll always be nice here. Isn't that weird? And this poor girl is like, oh my god, like, please shut up. We're just trying to get great and unpleasant interaction. And I'm like, well, Livia, that's why people don't like you, because you're annoying. But
it's so true.
But now that she's aiming it at like men, suddenly I'm like, go, bitch, like get them.
Like, yes, slay. I'm like, tear them apart. Mm-hmm. Yes. You're right. They are. Yeah, I want to die of boredom too. Yeah. I agree. I think that for the first time, I actually didn't hate her in this chapter, and I think it was because she was up against actual conflict that we could see. Like this is high stakes. Like this is scary. And like I think that like as a person who has been in the position of like having to dress up and like be sort of on display and sort of like display your femininity and like be perfect and like smile and never show a moment of like crankiness, because like if you do, the rumors of like that author is a bitch will start online immediately. I could relate to it, especially the feet hurting. I can't tell you how many times I've worn inappropriate shoes.
So then oh my god.
What the fuck happened?
This is great.
Happened? So I was gagged.
I love this. So okay, so she's sitting and I have to give the writing credit yet again because there's no like real transition here. She's sort of just being washed over with boredom. She's going through like the motions, right, of these conversations.
Right.
And we're getting snippets of like what the men are saying. Like, I respect your legacy. Your father was a genius. And I might add, blue is a color in which you like, you know, we're getting like the platitudes that they're serving. And then someone's like, oh, like my favorite flower sonnet is the petunia, he says. And she's like smiling so hard her jaw hurts fakely. But then like in the exact same rhythm that we've been getting the rest of this bored conversation in, someone goes, you despise every moment of this. And it's like this jarring moment of like someone says something true and that like resonates with what she's thinking. And she's sort of like at first she doesn't really even adjust for it because she's on autopilot. But then he's like, you know, I mean, you hate this, the ball, the attention, the whole Corlo thing. I can tell a lot of things about you. Like he basically like calls her out on being like bored as fuck. And the writing really works well because like as a reader you're sort of like jarred, being like, oh my god, right? Like I too was on autopilot just like absorbing this, but now suddenly we're engaged in a conversation and they start to have this conversation, like her and this guy, right, start to have a conversation during the like choreography moment when they're like they can't touch but they are sort of dancing with one another through like poses, I guess, and that's what's happening as they're talking.
So yeah, I also really love that because it was almost like all of the guys and the conversation were blending together.
Yeah.
So it was just like everything was like rapid fire, and then suddenly someone says something to stand out. So basically she's like, how would you know if even if this was true? Like she tries to like push back on it because she's not supposed to like engage in this kind of conversation, even though what this person is saying is 100% true. And he's like, because we're just alike, right? And I'm like, well, first of all, we know who the fuck this is.
Yeah.
It's Kane.
It's Kane. It's Kane. It's Kane at the party. He is one of the suitors that's like, you know, getting into to chat with her.
I knew it.
I love this. Yeah, we knew that Kane was gonna like, because obviously where this book is sort of going is like love triangle land. And if you've ever seen like Bridgerton or any of like the sort of like Victorian shows, right? Like there's always the guy that sort of like calls out the really precocious girl on being bored and over it, sort of. And I think that's fun. It's a trope, but it's a fun one. And he's like, you think you're better than everybody, basically. And he even says to her, this is a bit egotistical of you. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, well, but you're correct. Like, you can't stop thinking that you have to pick from one of these mindless islanders, and you're horrified about this. And so I love that he like is very frank with her, and they have this great conversation. He does at one point say, you have such interesting eyes. And I'm like, no.
When I was waiting for it. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for it. I was like, if he says one single thing, if he says her eyes are mismatched, if he says there's something weird about them, mm-hmm. I'm going to throw this iPad across the room.
Yeah.
And I didn't throw it because it costs a lot of money. Yeah. But in my heart, I did, because I just. Fuck. Oh my God. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah.
So wait, so okay, we've heard that Livia's eyes are mismatched, assuming Lex's are as well here, but I don't think Lex has ever mentioned. I can't tell who's done what at this point.
Yeah. So I can't remember whose eyes are the ones that are mismatched. They're somebody's. I thought it was Lex.
Yeah.
But maybe it's Livia. I thought it was Lex. I have to go back and look at my notes.
Yeah.
And check. But I wouldn't be surprised if their eyes are both mismatch.
Yeah.
And sort of like they have each other's like matching set or whatever the
something
hell.
Something like absolutely that. Yeah. Because this is basically like Kane, we have to assume, has just come from the scene with Lex, maybe, or like we don't know exactly the timing of these events. But right, like he's spent a lot of time with Lex and now is here with Livia. So he's obviously gonna see some sort of resemblance, even though it would be safe to assume that, like, you know, obviously Livia being very dolled up is gonna look very different than Lex in this moment, but I think that he senses the resemblance, right? And I think that's what this is the beginning of. It's unclear to me like how much he knows, but anyways, they keep talking, and unfortunately their dance comes to an end, and they're not able to basically finish a conversation. And for the first time, Livia is like left wanting more. She's like, mm-hmm. She's like thinking like, me and this guy, like, we're the same, we're not like the others. And there's a lot of language here being like, you know, we're not like these other mindless like sheeple, which is so cringy, but whatever, you know. It's like I'm gonna give it a pass. But she's in agreement. She's like, yeah, like there was something there, some actual energy there. And she spends the rest of the night sort of like looking for him in the crowd, and she can't find him because, you know, the next suitor takes his place, and the whole dance begins again.
So we have a section break, yeah. And basically talking about how
they go to dinner.
So she's looking for Kane still. It's a dinner time. She talks about how the Helix Grand Ballroom is supposed to be like the grandest in all of Indra. She's never seen the others, except for there's been socialization clubs. Once again, I wish we could have seen this before. Mm-hmm. So they have had socialization clubs, even though she hasn't gotten really invited to many of them because she's weird. I don't know. So she's like pretending to eat. She's only thinking of Kane. She's like, where is he? By an accident, she like pops open her fan, which is like the signal for the guys to like come talk to her, and they're like there eagerly waiting like little puppies. And she's like trying to find like a way to like get everyone away from her. She feels like everyone's watching her.
Yeah.
And like the room is sort of like it's closing in on her. Like she feels like very sort of like exposed.
Yeah.
And
there was
she lot. Ends up just leaving, basically.
In this scene, though, there was a lot of her using the fan. And if you remember, fan language is one of their courses. And she sort of, like, forgets it. So mm-hmm. she's, like, in an effort to actually cool herself off, she's actually, like, telegraphing different
using it.
To the head.
Yeah.
It's funny because she's like, she like starts to fan herself and then stops on the men. Like, it really feels like a game of like red light, green light, where they're like, oh. And then she like stops and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. She switches her hands, which means she's not, they're like, all stop. And then she thinks of Kane and her heartbeat races again. And she starts to fan herself a little faster. And all the men are like, oh. She stops them again.
You mean now?
Tapping on her cheek. And then finally, she, what causes her to like, she like, sees Micah and feels like Micah basically represents like the failure, right? Like, she's like, I'm about to fail, I'm about to faint, I'm gonna be one of these stories. Like, Micah's looking at me, like waiting for me to do it. And Livia stands up and gives a little tap at the fan, which means like, I need to go get a breath of fresh air. And she waltzes out of the room, and someone makes like an excuse being like, oh, she's just going to, you know, rest for a moment, right? Someone, she's excused basically, like, for a moment. But she takes a lot more than a moment because she runs outside. We get a section break and she's outside, and she goes full on Kelly Clarkson behind these hazel eyes and like rips off a lot of the dress and just starts running through the mud outside.
I'm sorry, but I loved this fucking scene.
Yes.
Like, she, first of all, like the moment of like shoes that hurt you, you taking them off and like walking on the grass and like the mud, especially, like that is just like such a relief. So I loved that. I love that she like took the fabric of her dress and like made a little knot with it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, there was like a lot of like relatable, like I'm uncomfortable
yeah
moments, and she was just like running through the dark, letting her hair out. I don't give a fuck. And I think this feeling of like who they're showing us right now is like the Livia that they've been trying to portray to us the whole book, but this is the first time that I really felt who the character was supposed to be, and I felt like any sort of like sympathy or care for her at mm-hmm. all, because she is actually escaping from a really uncomfortable situation. And mm-hmm. I keep going back to what you said the other episode, that like the chapter with the simulation, the final simulation, should have been Lex's chapter one. I think this should have been Livia's chapter
yes,
one.
This is why I think
it would have been so much better. These are their inciting incidents. Like, these moments yes. are their inciting incidents. And had they cut, there's a thing that happens when you write a first draft, especially, but especially as a new author, it's that sometimes you have to write things because you're telling it to yourself, mm-hmm. not necessarily because you need to tell it to the audience or to your readers. And I feel like all of those things beforehand were necessary for the authors to understand where their characters came from, mm-hmm. but it was a little bit too much information for the readers. They could have really condensed all of the things that they showed us in flashbacks seated throughout the book after the actual action happened. But mm-hmm. like the first, like, 100 and whatever pages of this book really should have been cut.
We're on page 162 for reference in the paperback, and my theory, because I was thinking about this too, was that originally the book probably did begin right before or very close to like the simulation exam and like the emergence ball, right? And I think they then decided to write two books and had to basically split that book in two, and so they added basically all this like prologue into this book, and to like pad it out or something like that too, because it feels so distinct, and even the writing quality shifts like so drastically that, like, I don't know, there's something very initial chapter, very inciting incident about like these moments, and yeah, I feel like this is where the book is beginning, literally. So she runs through the mud,
literally,
and I mean, I like this because of the, you know, she's so uncomfortable and now she's much more comfortable, she's sort of running from this. But I also just love, it's sort of the very first time, aside from the very first chapter, where we're seeing Livia actually like run and move around. She's just been sitting through like classes and tutorings and
yeah,
various like archive things, and she's been very stationary. But this is the first time that we're actually seeing her like go for something, aside from the time that she cut the apple in half, which chronologically was a day before this, right? Like, because remember the very first chapter was like a day before the emergence ball or what, something like that.
Oh my god, so, I didn't even remember that.
Yeah, so that technically just happened like a few moments ago, like in this timeline. But I'm like, yeah, no wonder. But anyways, she's racing through the forest, and where does she get to? But of course, the stables. She is on her way to see Mother Horse Beta. who is
our favorite character of the entire book, the horse.
Yeah, truly. So I love that, like, she basically goes to the stable and there's like a track there, and she says, like, well, you know, of course I programmed Veda so that she could have instant archive access, you know, whenever she wants to go in. She could be running through like fields and romping through hills and shit. But Veda doesn't, like, Veda knows that it's fake and doesn't get the same, like, pleasure out of it. So Veda actually, as it turns out, is not in the archives as often as we thought. But in my heart, she still is logging in and, like, playing Stardew Valley.
I love that she can go in by herself. That is so crazy to me.
Yes. Yeah, the horse has access.
It's a real horse. Like, can we train real horses to go into, like, the metaverse? Like, give me a break.
Why do they do this to the horse? Like, why did they bother, like, equipping the horse with, like, VR? Is it just because there are no animals, and so as a result, the distinction between, like, humans and animals is so porous that, like, they're like, oh, well, like, here's another living, breathing, organic thing. Like, we might as well.
I feel like this is probably a symptom of them over-explaining again.
Yeah.
And there's probably going to be a moment where Veda being... Like, Veda appears in an archive and, like, saves Livia or something like that.
Oh, my God.
It has to be. It has to be.
They are going to drag this horse into some crazy shit. And I just love the idea that, like, while on battle, the horse is going to be, like, somewhere in her stable just, like, whinnying while, like, wearing her little VR headset, which so funny to me. But, yeah, she goes up to Veda. She's like, hey, girl, like, you know, you love me just how I am. And Veda's like, yeah, like, they have like a cute little moment, and she's crying. She also, like, what I needed a slight reminder of in this chapter is that Livia is also an empath. She can, like, sense emotions. Do you remember this? Like, she's like,
I forgot that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like borderline telepathy, and she can read Veda's thoughts, right? Like, we had gotten that information at some point too, where she can, like, she can absorb, like, she can even feel Veda's thoughts over, like, long distances too. So they're having, like, a horse girl conversation. when, let's see.
So she starts crying and she hears a voice.
Oh, I thought it was the horse.
Someone,
I thought it was the
says,
horse at first. Being like, child. Child, listen to me, my child. But it's not the horse.
I thought I might find you here.
Yeah.
The horse is British.
Yeah.
So she hears a voice. She doesn't turn around. It's very clearly Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, how did you know I would be here? And he's like, this is where I would go. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm like, he better be here for a reason. Because if he's just all of a sudden so interested in her after he had this whole, like, thing with Lex, I suddenly hate him. And yeah. Men deserve no rights. But
yeah.
Turns out he does have a mission. So
yeah.
They start talking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting sort of, like, intense. In that she can feel his emotions and his thoughts, that he wants to kiss her.
Yeah, yeah. And further, she feels like maybe she's safe with him, because typically Veda, who abhors strangers, is playfully nudging the side of my face and giving a serene whinny. Which, I don't know what a serene whinny sounds like. I mean, I haven't spent that much time around horses, but Veda is basically like, oh, like, here's a boy, like, you very, I mean, very motherly behavior out of Veda, being like, mm-hmm, oh, like, mm-hmm. He seems kind of nice, like, go say hi to him. And she's like, no, like, don't come any closer. And he's like, I don't want to. But she can feel his actual emotions, that, like, he does want to, that, like, he wants to kiss her. And she's like, I kind of want to kiss him too. And at one point he says, before any of the shit goes down, he says, funny, you remind me of someone. And that's the precise moment when he starts to become, like, a little bit less flirtatious and a little uneasy about, like, this potential kiss. But she still wants to kiss him.
Right. And she, in her mind, she's like, it's prohibited. Like, I can't kiss you. But then she's like, I am so tired of prohibited. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't do anything that I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm so sick of it. I can't leave the island. I can't ask questions. I can't fight. I can't laugh too loud. Or I can't breathe in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I was thinking, I wish we would have seen all of these moments, because
yeah,
it would have made me so much more of a sympathetic character,
right.
But whatever.
Right.
Let's just pretend that's true, bestie. She's like, fuck it. I'm gonna kiss him.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do what I want. And she does.
She does. And she says, well, also, she says, like, for once, I will do exactly what I want. And I'm like, we have been with you for the past, like, 200 odd pages. Like,
you can't lie to us.
Yeah, like, let's be for real. You have been doing.
But you can lie to the governess, yeah. But not to us.
Yeah.
We've seen you.
We've been with you for all of this. Like,
we have the security footage.
She was just, like, fighting with a samurai a few chapters ago. Why is she talking?
Every chapter, she does something she's not supposed to do.
Yeah.
She's gaslighting us. So she's kissing him. They're, like, making out kissing.
Yeah.
And then something rolls into her mouth.
From his mouth into hers. From your lips to God's ears to God's lips to your mouth. Here it comes. And at first I was like, if this is whipped cream, I'm going to fucking scream. If this is...
I didn't even think of that. If this I is didn't a even think pickle, of whipped cream. Oh my God. A gherkin. No.
This is a gherkin.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to season one.
Oh my God. But that's where my mind went.
It's not a pickle and it's not whipped cream.
No.
It's fucking poison.
It's like a cyanide pill.
I can't believe it.
It's not a cyanide pill, as it turns out, but it's like a suicide pill, basically, that he had, like, in his tooth or something. And he's like, spit it out immediately, like, and she does, but, like, not before some of it, like, gets in her mouth, and she's, like, spitting this, like, acrid, bitter taste. And Veda's, like, now Veda's upset. The days of the serene Winnie are over. Veda is like,
are over.
Oh my God, what happened? Like, this horse is, like, bad judge of character, as it turns out, because he literally just tried to kill her with
Veda,
his tongue.
You're stupid.
Yeah. And then, for the first time in Indra, someone invented glue right after this.
No.
Jealous on your hand.
No! So Cain is like, Cain was like, I changed my mind, actually. He was like, I wasn't going to do it, because she's like, did you just try to kill me? And he's like, I wasn't going to do it, but then you kissed me.
Yeah, and he, during the kiss, like, he's pulling away, and it just makes her want to, like, kiss him all, because in her head, she's like, he's pulling away because it's improper what I'm doing, but really, he's, like, trying not to kill her, and I'm like, this is great, this is really good, and...
amazing.
And yeah, so now he's like, oh my God, like, I'm so sorry. Like, actually, I don't think he says sorry, but he's, oh no, he does. I'm sorry. And his emotions are out of control. Like, he doesn't know what he's feeling or thinking. And she can, like, sense all this because of her, like, empath abilities. But she's outright like, did you just try to kill me? And at the same time, she notes that, like, I don't know how she knows this, but, like, half the pill has dissolved already in his mouth. Like, he, like, bit it off at, like, the last second. So he has taken a bunch of the poison into his system. Obviously.
Yeah, I think he's, like, having, like, a reaction to it. Like, to the poison. His eyes go blank, his body's shuddering, and, like, half of the pill, like, fell to the ground. So she knows that the other half, I guess, is in his mouth. And then Waslow shows up, and a bunch of population control
officers this
show up too.
So obviously the only way that you can show that someone is dying or has some sort of, like, lethal symptom happening to them in anything is you have to give them a bloody nose, right? Because that's the only symptom that we ever get, right? Like, psychic powers, bloody nose. Like, poison, bloody nose. Why a bloody nose? I don't even know. But he gets the bloody nose. He falls to his knees, and he's, like, falling over, and, like, he goes, Livia, he says softly. His eyes go blank, his body shudders, and then she goes, I mean, someone should try to save him. I just don't think that's me. Like, she's dying at her feet, and she's like, it's just not a very, like, me-coded thing to save this, like, someone should.
What the fuck? She's like, I think someone should save him. It's not gonna be me, it's just something I've noticed.
Something that I'm noticing right now is that he's definitely dying, he needs medical help, but, like, that's not gonna be me.
Also, the whole bloody lip curling upward, not necessary. Like, I know they're trying to show, like, oh, his lip curling smile. Like, why is he smiling? Like,
his eyes give a final flicker of recognition. So, I mean, this is the question, right? Like, it's, does he finally figure out, like, who she is in relation to Lex? Because he then goes, Livia. Like, it would be amazing if he said, like, Lex or something like that. Like, in his delirium, like, he confuses them or something. But
right.
He says her name specifically, and But the recognition is the important part, because we've been getting little hints that he's been, like, piecing things together throughout this. So, like, I'm excited to sort of see how this fits into, like, the broader timeline, because it's not clear. But I'm not mad that it's not clear.
Yeah, I guess it depends how it pays off.
Yeah.
But basically, everyone
authorities
rushes
arrive.
And he's getting arrested. A moth just landed on my window and scared the shit out of me. He's arrested. They're beating the shit out of him. And she's screaming at them to stop. He's unconscious. And she's like, well, at least he can't feel pain anymore. And that's the end of the chapter.
The ending was a little funny, though. Like, in the same way that someone should save him. It's not going to be me. The ending was similarly, like, a little bit remote. Like, they surround him, and Waso takes my hand and pulls me away. They're beating this boy, and once more, I can't get a read on him. I scream again and again for them to stop. He's completely and utterly emotionless. He's unconscious as they continue to hit him. At least he's no longer feeling any more pain, I hope. Like, I kind of wish there was a stronger emotional reaction to watching this, like, person get beat, and maybe we could acknowledge the conflict of the fact that he's a killer. But I love that, like, he's being beaten up, like, beaten to smithereens, and she can't get a read on him. Like, I imagine them, like, beating this person up.
Who the fuck cares?
Like, down, like, look at, like, peering at him, being like,
I'm pretty sure he's not happy, bitch. Like, what do you want him to feel in this moment?
As an empath, I can tell that you're not too happy. Like, I
agree with you. The very end, especially, like, they needed to flesh that out a little bit. I would have loved to see her actually screaming at them to stop.
Yeah, what did she say?
What were they doing to Kane? Could you hear his, like, bones cracking? Like, I want to, like, feel the, like, how badly they're hurting this kid. He is a kid. He's 17, right? Yeah. And her feeling a little bit more than just, like, what? At least he's not feeling pain anymore. Because he just tried to fucking kill her. Like, who are you? Like, what just happened? Like, why did this guy just appear here and try to kill me? Like, what is going on? Like, I would have loved to get a little bit more of, like, she's freaked out. She's scared. She's wondering what happened. But instead, like, all of that sort of gets erased. And she's just thinking about what's happening to him, which that's fine. She can think about what happened to him. But, like, you also almost just died.
Right.
Like, she would be in shock in this moment.
Right. And I wish that this connected somehow to, like, the rest of the chapter about, like, her life, like, the failure, like, the disgrace that she's risking by, like, falling. Like, there's a few other hooks that could have made for really a little bit more of, like, a satisfying ending. But, you know, all in all, though, a really good chapter. Like, a really
good... This has been the best chapter so far. Like, by far. It was so good. I was reading it, and I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
They did this one little thing right.
Yeah, I was really amazed by that. So, that's the end of this chapter, and we have attended our first, and I suspect, last emergence ball. We did it, Hot Queens, and we made it to the
emerging,
ball.
It's done.
Oh, my God. Here we go. All right. I mean, this is actually a little complicated because typically Rose and Thorn is somewhat straightforward, but this time around I think it's a little harder because there's actually a lot of stuff
I don't think so. I can still find plenty to not like.
I'm an empath and I can sense that you have plenty to talk about.
I feel like the only weak, on aside from the very end, which I sort of already explained why I didn't like, I think the only really weak part of this chapter was, like, the focus on Micah. On a set, I do like the story about the girl who fell. I think it would have been more poignant if they put that in another chapter rather than waste their time with, like, bullying that was not connected to anything else. But, like, her at the emergence ball and, like, staring at her and, like, I don't know. I'm really sick of these, like, villain girls for no reason, as I always say. And it was just more of that, and I just felt like it was unnecessary given that she had all these other things to, like, contend with the whole chapter. So I just felt like that was, like, a little bit overdone and not necessary, the whole Micah being there, like, wanting her to fail. Like, who gives a fuck? Like, totally. Unless she's gonna actually, like, sabotage you, delete
her.
I have a lot of roses for this chapter. I think there was so much that was really well done. But I'm going to say the part that I loved the most that stood out to me was her escaping and running away from the ball and sort of, like, ripping all of her decorative, like, things off of her, messing her hair up. I loved that moment. I think it was well written. The visuals of it were perfect, and I think that it was like encapsulates like what who this character is supposed to be, mm-hmm. and they haven't been able to get it right until this moment. And yeah. I appreciated that it happened at all.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So my rose is. I mean, there's many roses to choose from. There's a lot of things that I admire about this chapter. I'm not going to say this is my rose, but the writing I have to commend. Like, some really strong, like, cool yeah. writing and phrasing in a lot of this that I already talked about. But I will say that my rose, it's just from an intrigue perspective, the, like, attempted assassination and the way that that dynamic of her wanting to, like, break protocol but him not wanting to kill her, like, the way that those two things were opposed to one another and resulted in, like, a really great conflict, that's cool. That's really cool. I love that.
Yeah,
like,
I think
they did a really good job, like, thinking through this. My thorn is that we get this amazing, electric, exciting chapter so far into the book. And what reader is going to make it this far into the book to almost 200 pages in to what really should be one of the very first things that happens? And, I mean, I guess we'll see, like, how the rest of the book plays out. But it is my distinct sense that the book should have began here. Same thing with Lex's chapters. And that we could have deployed some of that backstory, like, you know, later on in the book. We didn't need to go through all of this, too. And so the structure, from a structural level, like a macro structural level, what this exhibits to me is that this book needed to be re-outlined. And writers listening to this is a great thing to know in your own book. Like, if there's a scene that you're really excited about that you feel like sort of bundles together all of your inspiration, and it's not the climax, it's like, you know, something like midway through the book, like, you may think about asking yourself, when do things really change for my character? When does something change to the point that you cannot go back? Right? Like, this is a good example for Livia. She cannot go back to, like, society. She's ruined her chances by, like, running out of this ball. Someone just tried to kill her. Like, there's suddenly a scandal surrounding her, right? Like, things have changed indelibly. And that's what makes something an exciting incident, right? So, I mean, being able to, like, point this out is easy, but only when you really look at things in, like a macro perspective. And I don't know, this book should have started, like, with this, I think. I don't know. That's my thorn.
100%. I think that's one of the things that I employ in my own writing. Like, when I am miserable writing a chapter, mm-hmm. I go back and I look at it and I say, okay, is this really necessary? Can I convey this information that I'm trying to get across in a different way? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I end up either completely reworking how that chapter is written or cutting it completely. Because yeah. to be honest with you, if I am not excited about what I'm writing, I know my readers are not going to be excited about reading it. That doesn't mean that every moment you're writing is like, oh my God, yeah, this is great. But it shouldn't be this, like, horrible torture where you, like, absolutely hate what you're writing and feel like it's pointless. Like, I guess sometimes it can feel like that, even if it's necessary. But that's why I say to sort of rethink it and see if you can rework it and if there's something that you can do so that you're not bored mm-hmm. as you work on it. Because 9 out of 10 times, that's, like, sort of like the push that you need to make it go from either, like, really bad or, like, mediocre to yep. something that can potentially be great.
Yeah, totally. If anyone wants some really good examples of, like, great openings, I will recommend our books, because I think that you and I do this really well. I'm not kidding. Where, like I can point, like, okay, first of all, like, Witchlings begins, like, the night of this really important ceremony. And by the end of a short chapter, it's a middle grade book, right? Like, you've got to get through a ton in it. Like, something has gone horrifically wrong for the main character. Yeah. And I always strive to make my books, both The Honeys and Beholder, do this really well. I think something horrific happens.
Yeah, in, like, the first chapter of The Honeys is fucking wild.
Yeah, it, like, in the 6 pages, like, things are changed. And of course, like, in both of our books and the things that we're writing, like, there's really important backstory. But starting with all that backstory and, like, making someone do, like, a primer on, like, the world before we give them actually something interesting to think about is a one-way ticket to, like, DNFville, right? Like, and that's what I think happened to this book. I think so many people sort of picked it up either thinking they were going to get, like, sort of this confection tale, right? Like, because, you know, it's from celebrities, right? And it's going to be sort of a thinly veiled telling of their own lives. Or people, like, thought it was going to be, you know, like, bad off the bat. And this book actually turns out it's somewhere in the middle where, like, there are really interesting moments to it. Like, there's a real effort here. And as it turns out, like, the language is so self-serious and high that, like, I think it automatically alienates the people that just wanted, like, a light sort of, like, frivolous story. But it's not good enough to really capture the hearts of people that want, like, something with gravitas. And so it falls sort of in the middle. And I'm, like, frustrated with it because it could have been, I think, really good had it been, like, reworked in a really specific way. So hire us.
hire the Bad Author Book Club consulting firm.
Yeah, the baddies. But, dude, okay, I mean,
we're only $2,000 an hour.
That's it. That's all. That's amazing. But, oh, I'm so excited. I mean, what a good chapter. What a good episode. I am the most excited I've ever been about this book. So that's...
I can't wait till the next chapter. I, like, actually might read ahead because I want to know what happens. And I can tell you that has never happened with Modeland.
Girl, oh my God. Yeah, no, not at all. So yeah, a Bad Author Book Club first. But thank you, Hot Queens, for listening. Go head out to our Discord. The link is in the show notes. Let us know what you thought. Let us know what questions you have. This was a long chapter. We couldn't possibly sort of include everything. So if you want to know some specifics, meet us on Discord. We will chat about it in the episode discussion channel. And, of course, seek us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter at Bad Author Pod, Instagram at Bad Author Book Club. And all of our episodes are up on anchor.fm/Bad Author Book Club or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Just make sure to leave us a rating and send us virtual kisses. If you'd like to follow me, co-host Ryan, I am the Ryan LaSala on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I'm now on Threads under that username as well. You can find me on Blue Sky under Ryan LaSala. Just go to my website, ryanlasala.com. That has all the information on it.
And actually, all of our socials are in the show notes as well.
Oh, yeah.
You can follow us right from the show notes.
Do that.
Just, my links are in the show notes. Click on them.
Oh, my God. So
classy. Go to my website, clarabellortega.com.
I like that a lot better. I'm no longer listing shit out. You want to find me? You got to search. Honey, you gotta seek me out. I'm an experience.
Type my name. Use voice to text. I don't care how you do it.
Or you can use Memoji like my mother, who chooses to represent herself as completely bald.
Oh my God.
When she bald. Texts me with a Memoji, she's bald.
She's the funniest woman on planet Earth. I agree. Is Ryan's mother. Love her so much.
Oh, I'm going to go call her right now.
Oh, I'll tell her I said hi. All right.
I will.
Goodbye, Hot Queens.
Bye, Hot Queens.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.